Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
You got an opportunity. If you still have him in your life, absolutely take advantage of that. I'm fortunate enough to say that I do, and I'm taking my dad to the Braves game tomorrow. Very much excited about that. I don't know if he's ever been to a Braves game, actually. I don't think he has. So getting to experience that with him for the first time, we're really excited. I get to go with my little brother and my dad, and it's going to be a lot of fun. And Eric, I'll bring you in here for this, too. So as far as core memories go, you know, I think back to how I became a sports fan. And look, my dad's not the biggest sports fan in the world. He's not somebody who goes rabid over sports like I do, like many people here at the station do, like many people in the city do. But, you know, he supported me with that. And for that, I'm forever grateful to him for that. And it was when I was 7, 8, 9, 10 years old or so. And it was when my parents are divorced. So it's like I would be spending the time over at his place on the weekends and everything with my brothers. And they'd get he used to always read the newspaper every single morning. He'd read like 3 or 4 newspapers. He's one of those guys. And he'd always save the comic book section for my brother and the sports section for me. And I would read Cunningham. I'd read Jeff Schultz. I'd read all these great writers over there at the AJC. And it fueled a passion and love for Atlanta sports teams. And then the national scene, I would read. He got me every single year for Christmas. My brothers would get something, and I'd get a season-long or year-long subscription to ESPN the magazine and Sports Illustrated. They'd get excited that they were getting a Sports Illustrated swimsuit edition. I was excited that I was getting a monthly subscription to what I believed to be the best magazine at the time, and that came from my dad, and that's really where all this came from, all this passion, all this love and everything for sports media. That's where it started, you know, and weekends like this always remind me of that fact.
Well, that's a cool story, man. How cool was it that Sports Illustrated came out every Monday?
The best. Yeah, it was so cool. Great. And I would get that magazine, and every single time I'd go over to his house, I'd effectively have a new copy just sitting there waiting for me. And I'd sit there and I'd read it throughout the week, and I'd get to. It was nuts because then it's like we'd go to dinners or whatever, and some guys are chatting about sports, and some 14-year-old comes up and is like, nope, and then I just jump right in with them, you know, and I'd own them, you know, like I'd dominate the conversation with it, and it didn't matter what we were talking about. I mean, NHL at the time, I'd still be pretty well versed. I understood everything that was going on better than I do now, I'll say, but you know, I mean, that's the thing, and that's really where it comes from.
Well, sounds like great memories, and eventually, you know, Garrett Chapman, someday, hopefully you'll have your little tights running around.
That's
and
true,
you can
man.
Do the same for you so. Guys, for your next generation.
Yeah. And look, so do you have pets at home?
I have one dog. Yes,
so
I do.
Do you consider yourself like a parent because you have what they call fur babies?
No, I do not.
See, I don't either. And I love my girlfriend. She's the best. We live together. We're She wants to get. She we were walking around Target the other day, and she said, "Garrett, what do you want for Father's Day?" I'm like, I don't want anything for Father's Day. I don't have kids. I'm not a dad. He's like, no, you have two babies at home. Talking about our dogs, and I'm like, no, it's not the same, man. It's not the same. But she was adamant she wants to get something for Father's Day. I got her something for Mother's Day, but it's mostly just an excuse to get her something, you know, and I don't, any excuse is a good excuse to treat your lady. So I took advantage of that, but I don't, it's funny, but no, I digress. So tell me about your dad. So tell me about your folks, man. And what's Father's Day mean to you?
Well, my dad has passed away. He's been gone for a little while now, but my dad was a huge baseball and football fan. And, you know, Chris Thomas asked me the same question. I was working with Chris earlier. Mm-hmm. Other than the, you know, of course, the football and the baseball, me and my dad, and actually everybody in my family, Monday night was set your TV night. And it wasn't for Monday Night Football. Hmm. It was for WWE. Ah. We were a – my mom, my brother, myself, we were a huge wrestling family. And we could not wait for Monday Night Raw, Monday Night Nitro. When that was big in the 90s, that was our weekly just moment together. I couldn't wait to get home from school, mm-hmm. get my homework done or practice or whatever I had going on, because come 8 o'clock – we were in front of the TV, and this is back during the, I mean, were you ever in wrestling? Do you remember the Monday Night Wars?
No, I was never, I'm not a wrestling guy.
Okay, so the Monday Night Wars were when WWE Raw went head-to-head versus Monday Nitro, WCW Monday Nitro, and yeah. we all, you know, who would have the better programming? And I was a Nitro guy, my dad was a Raw guy, because my dad, oh my God, he was the biggest Stone Cold Steve Austin fan there was ever.
Love it.
In his later years, he'd walk around the house. Whenever he said, he, you know, when he had something on his mind, whenever he wanted to prove his point, he said, that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so. And we would just say, oh, man, go somewhere with your Stone Cold said so bull crap. But, yeah, that was, I mean,
that's awesome.
We were a wrestling family, man. Big time, big time.
Was he a Colts fan?
Well, most of my family were Colts fans.
Because you're Baltimore.
Right, but my dad actually was a Redskins fan. Okay.
Oh,
so
because okay.
so most of my family, where my family's met on the eastern shore of Maryland, mm-hmm. which is closer to the DC and Delaware line. Mm-hmm. So my dad was a huge Redskins fan, or I guess I should call them the Commanders now, but you
sure.
know, but the Orioles, the Yankees, because his roots went back to New York. The Orioles, the Yankees, the Redskins, and our wrestling. Big Ric Flair. He'd walk around the house doing a Ric Flair strut.
Woo!
Yes, all the time. All the time. So we love it. And I mean, I'm still a huge wrestling fan.
Love well, good
it.
For you. Yeah. I love that. I love that. No, I love how everybody has like a slightly different type of memory. And I always like asking folks about them too. You know, that's the other crazy thing is how close together all those cities are up there. You never know, because you can throw a rock and hit Philadelphia from Baltimore, seemingly.
Yeah, maybe it's like you DC probably have to throw it and skip it a couple times, but you definitely could throw it to D.C.
I mean, relative yeah. to what
oh,
we have
yeah,
in Atlanta.
No, absolutely.
Relative
no,
to Atlanta.
Absolutely.
You know?
Our drive, you're in D.C., 30, 40
minutes.
2 hours
in New York?
Two and a half. 3, depending on traffic. But see, everybody skips right over Jersey, you know, because that's the deal. Everyone says, oh, we're going to New York, but if I wanted to go to a Giants or Jets game, I'm just going to Jersey, so it's
there
even closer than you think.
Jeez.
Yeah.
You know, that's the crazy thing. That's something that's missed me completely, and I mean, I'm isolated as can be. I'm born and raised here in Atlanta, and Atlanta's the only thing like around here, you know, as far as big cities go and large metropolises and northeastern United States is completely different.
Yeah, well, actually, you know, like my mom and my sister, you know, women who like to go shopping, they'd get up on a Saturday, hop on the train. Because you could catch the it was called the Metro Liner, and you're in New York in 2 hours on the train, and you can go shopping all day, hit all
some
the big
mimosas
stores,
and hop on the train and come
hop
home.
On the train, come home. Yeah,
how about that?
Absolutely.
Yeah, the girlfriend's from Philly, so she had the same thing.
Yeah, yeah. Remind me someday off air to tell you my mom's Broadway Denzel Washington experience.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll do that.
Yep.
We'll do that. We'll finish up the show, and I'll come over there and I'll chat with you about that one. No, that's a lot of fun. I love that. And look. If you have a Father's Day memory, hit me up at GChapATL on Twitter. Love to go back and forth with folks on Father's Day memories just because it's a big Father's Day weekend, big weekend for all of us here at the station, and we just wanted to shout that out. Shout out your dad, you know. Give him a call. It's a big weekend for everybody. No, but another big weekend, too. NBA Finals, it's coming to a head. You know, the series is now tied up 2-2. Big game last night, the Oklahoma City Thunder. Charles Barkley talked about how they said that was the game that was going to decide the series. You know, because if the Thunder lost that game, it was all she wrote. Because I understand it happened before. 2016 was a long time ago. One team has come back from that 3-1 deficit, but that's a death note in the NBA, especially in the playoffs when you get these teams that are You're just not winning three games in a row after being down 3-1. It's just not the way it goes. And there's no superhuman. SGA, all due respect, he's a good player, very good player, but he's not LeBron James. You know, so he's not an alien. He's not somebody who's going to will their team and score 40 points a game as they come back from a 3-1 deficit. He's just not that kind of guy, and the Pacers weren't going to let it happen. So Thunder had a big opportunity, and they took full advantage of it, and they kind of reversed the script there on the Pacers there for a bit. You know, they don't score really at all, and the Pacers pretty much lead this game from pole to pole, and they were in full control. Kind of how a lot of the series has gone, except with the Thunder. And then the Pacers would just show up in the fourth quarter and play a big game and steal it. That's kind of what the Thunder did. You know, they still shot very poorly in this game. They took 16 threes and only made three of them, 18%. Ooh, it's not very good. But the Pacers, they aren't much better. They get 30%, but they take 36 threes. Missed a lot of shots there. Missed a lot of shots. But it's been a really fun NBA Finals. I've really enjoyed it. And everybody who's thrown the ratings, the TV ratings? I don't give a damn about ratings. I don't care. Is the product good? Yes, very good. I'm enjoying the hell out of this. Just the same thing if you're watching the Stanley Cup Finals. I'm enjoying the hell out of that too. Not a lot of people are watching, unfortunately, but I don't give a damn because it's fun. I'm enjoying myself. It's entertainment. And it's been pretty damn entertaining. No blowouts, no craziness, nothing like that. And the NBA Finals and Tyrese Halliburton and company, man, they've been a lot of fun to watch, you know, and Halliburton tried to pull off some magic again, but they don't pass the ball well in the fourth quarter, and they end up falling in this one, and they get outscored 31-17 in the final frame. Crazy. Crazy to think about that, but this is also a Pacers team. This got me thinking. I was texting with Caleb Johnson last night, our Hawks reporter, and I was thinking about how the Atlanta Hawks can potentially model themselves off of the Indiana Pacers, because we're not a team that's going to be able to copy the Thunder. That's not a team that a lot of people are going to be able to copy because of the amount of draft capital that they've had over the last couple of years. But they do illustrate a great point, both of these teams, about the, I think somebody on the broadcast said this game after game three, it was the let it bake theory about how you need these teams to lose together, to win together, to do everything together and grow together. You learn that way. You become a unit that way. And I think the Atlanta Hawks are kind of starting to do that. And I think they can do what the Pacers are doing right now. I mean, you go up and down the roster, the Hawks are built very similarly to what the Pacers can do. They don't play elite defense, but they play active defense. It's complementary to what that offense does. And that offense is one of the best in the half court. The Hawks can do exactly the same thing, and they move the ball really well. You know, that's why the Pacers have had a lot of success against this Thunder team. Because the Thunder are really, really good at cutting off the head of the snake. It's what they did to Anthony Edwards in the Western Conference Finals. It's what they ended up doing to Jokic, not to a lesser degree, when they played the Nuggets. It's what they've done at a really high level this season. It's why they won 68 games. Because whenever a team comes in there and faces you, they just chop off the head. They swarm the star and they knock him out. But the Pacers aren't really built that way. The Pacers are built in a way where they can facilitate and move the ball around, and Tyrese Halliburton can take a back seat and move off screens, and I think Trae Young can learn a lot from that. I think Trae Young can really learn a lot from that, because I think the Pacers are at their best when Tyrese Halliburton is moving the ball around, when he's getting up there in the double-digit assist numbers. Same thing is with the Hawks. If Trae gets up into the 12, 13, 14 assists in a game, Hawks are generally going to win that game. It's not about him scoring. It's about him facilitating. And I think with this team right now, you look at Zachary Risuche, you look at Jalen Johnson. Oh, and Onyeka Okongwu is basically Miles Turner. You have a very similar guy, but he rebounds better. He's a little bit smaller, but he rebounds better. They both shoot decently well. They can play away from the rim. Zachary Risuche, Jalen Johnson, you see them take that next step next year. You got guys like that, what you see with Pascal Siakam. I think Jalen Johnson can be what Pascal Siakam is. You have one of the best on-ball defenders in Dyson Daniels. I mean, look, the difference between the Pacers and the Hawks is that the Hawks just don't have the depth. You got to go get some guys with some playoff experience. I mean, Alex Caruso, Pascal Siakam, they feel like they've been the two most important players, not named Tyrese Halliburton or SGA, in this series. Because you get guys with that playoff experience and gritty role players who come off the bench and bust their ass, makes your team better. And I think the Hawks can replicate that fact. But don't mess around with this. Let it bake. I think a breakout is coming sooner than we think. I'm excited about this. So don't trade these guys away for some low-end success that you may or may not have next year. Like, keep me away from Giannis Antetokounmpo. I love Giannis. He's a great player. He's a future Hall of Famer. He's 30 years old, still has a couple of great years left, but you got to gut your team to go get him. Same can be said about Kevin Durant, a guy who I think is completely over the hill. It'll sell tickets. It'll be fun offense, but you're not going to win a lot of games. Follow the lead of the Indiana Pacers because I think the Hawks are a lot closer than you might think. All right, when we get back, I got a great conversation coming up with Ben Portnoy. He is a whiz when it comes to everything college sports, the business of college sports. He's with the Sports Business Journal. He joins me next. You're coming off the bench with me, Garrett Chapman, right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Welcome back in Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. College football and college sports in general, it's at a crossroads, or at least it crossed over what seemed to be a pretty big crossroads. And to kind of explain what's going on with this house settlement deal, it's very confusing. But to help explain it and kind of break it down for simple folk like me, I got Ben Portnoy here on the WadeForward.com hotline. He's with the Sports Business Journal. He's a sharp guy. So going to bring him in and kind of chat about this. So, Ben, it's been a week since that nice little Friday night news dump with the approval of the house settlement. Walk us through what this legal effort means for college athletics, just broad strokes. Just make it simple.
Yeah, no, it's a good question. I think, look, there's a couple of layers to it, right? I think at a fundamental level, though, and on a base level, essentially you've got an enterprise in college sports that is going from, for 100 years, saying, hey, paying players is bad, to schools, you can pay players directly. And I think that's a huge leap and a huge jump and a huge change in the way that people think around college athletics and the way the enterprise operates, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that that's why it's such a huge deal. I think the other piece of this is there's obviously been a million legal sort of issues around this and enterprise and around just college athletics in general. And I think that because of that, it's created a lot of chaos. And I think that the idea with this is that it will help to bring a little bit more stability and a little bit more structure to the space as well.
So, Ben, what took Claudia Wilkins so long to sign this settlement? It seemed like it was pretty much agreed upon, seeming like 6 months ago. What took so long to really make this decision official?
Yeah, you know, it takes time. I mean, these things obviously can take a few weeks to get finalized, and that's just kind of the realities of the situation. But I do think, like, ultimately that, you know, really the bigger thing here was that the idea here was to make this sort of airtight, right? And that basically, in so many words, that whenever people do appeal, that the appeals process will be, you know, sort of smoother and that there won't be so many things to dive into. And so, therefore, the judge wants to be meticulous in the way that they present the facts. And that's, I think, ultimately what took a little bit of extra time.
Gotcha. And Ben, you mentioned the appeals process. I mean, we're already seeing some lawsuits here from Title IX athletes, some female athletes. What do you make of these lawsuits? And is this really going to change anything with this decision, or what's to come of that?
No, that's a good question. I mean, so the appeal I think you're mentioning is an important one, and it's kind of the first one and the one that has been out there so far around the back pay toward athletes, basically back to 2016 and on, who weren't able to profit off their name, image, and likeness. In theory, they'd be paid out potentially as part of the terms of the settlement. That's kind of put on pause now, and that those funds are now in escrow, at least until that's resolved. You know, I spoke with the NCAA's lead counsel on this, Rakesh Kilaruto, yesterday, and he mentioned that, you know, this can take some time, that it's, you know, a year, year and a half, whatever it might be, to get resolved. So, you know, that feels like a short amount of time. I mean, it feels like a long amount of time, I should say, but is fairly quick as far as legal proceedings can be. So that at least is a little bit put on hold as far as the back pay, but we'll see what happens with the rest of it.
who benefits the most from this decision? I mean, you could say that the athletes benefit the most, but potentially it could cap their earning potential. But on the other side, you can say that the universities are benefiting because now that at least they have a plan. So what do you think about who benefits from this?
No, that's a good question. I think the schools obviously benefit. The NCAA obviously benefits. There's a few others that benefit. I think the athletes, it's a mixed bag. I think that there's certainly, I think it's certainly a good thing broadly that there is a little more structure around college athletics, and I think that athletes do want some of that. I also think that, the flip side of that being that there are limitations as well, and whether it does cap earnings and so on and so forth. So I think there are some questions around that. But again, to your point, I think by having more structure around college athletics, it at least gives everyone a chance to kind of play by the same rules. And I think that's an important point and an important important development, I should say, for the enterprise.
Yeah, so you talk about everyone's kind of – it's almost effectively a hard cap, basically. And does that level the playing field, or do you think that's going to end up making things more complicated down the road? Like, say, an Ohio State versus an Indiana or something like that, when you want to put it in that way?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, look, schools are going to commit what they can commit. I think that – I've kind of used the analogy in recent months, in baseball, right, there's big market teams and small market teams, and you're going to see that, right, with the way that people invest in college athletics and the way that they invest in different programs and the way that they, try to get up to the cap or not all the way to the cap and so on and so forth. And so because of that, I think it's a mixed bag. I think that, certainly there's always been inherent divides between what some schools can offer and what others can offer. And I think that now, instead of fancy facilities or fancy locker rooms or whatever it might be, it's literally paying players. And I think that has changed obviously a little bit, but it is still, something that's a little bit different, but I do think that it is still there have always been inherent disadvantages for some schools, and I think that those will still exist.
Yeah, and Ben, I mean, would this be the situation where do you have to spend the $15 million on football, or are we going to see teams like, say, Vanderbilt or something like that, who know that you can spend a little bit less money and go compete for championships in baseball or something like that? Do you think that we're going to see people mess around with those caps, or how does that work?
No, that's a really interesting piece of this. And I think, every school is going to be a little bit different, right? And I think you bring up a good example, right? Like, is Vanderbilt going to are they going to put a little bit more money toward, for example, baseball than they might with football? I think that's going to depend on the school, right? Or if you keep the SEC, you keep going down the SEC, right? Like, is South Carolina going to invest in women's basketball in a way that they might, other places might not, but does that mean football has a little bit less to work with? I think there's some truth to that. And I think that every school is going to have to take on whatever accounting they decide to take on. And I think that becomes a really fascinating dynamic to watch, but I think it's going to vary a ton school by school.
Yeah. And then as far as the $15 million that teams can spend on football every single year, are you going to see the price of players go down? Because I know that we have Carson Beck, who's making $6-8 million, whatever it is. You got Michigan signing quarterbacks out of high school for $8 million. I mean, are we going to see the price of players go down, or is it just going to be more standardized?
I think it ends up being more standardized, but I do think you bring up a good point as far as one of the sort of issues, if you want to call it that, with the settlement and what happens next is how do you account for the fact that the market has already outgrown essentially what the cap is? Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a really hard piece to figure out. And I think that's going to come to an head, right? There's an impasse there, certainly, that athletes are making X, and now under the new terms, they're going to make less than X. And I think that creates a lot of problems for a lot of places. And I think, kids don't want to take a pay cut. And I think that that's rightfully so, right? So I think that that becomes a really fascinating thing to watch. And whether that gets determined by the courts or whatever it might be, that is something that I think will continue to be a discussion.
Of course, especially at the quarterback position, because, Phillip Rivers' son, I think he's a class of 26 or 27 or 28 mm-hmm. or something like that. But he seems to be that next big big fish, if you will, at the quarterback position. And, I mean, it's very similar to what we saw with the recruitment of Arch Manning a couple of years ago when he went to Texas. I mean, I think that he's going to say, I'm not going to put words in his mouth, obviously, but it's the kind of situation where you have a player who can say, well, I can potentially go get this. And they say, well, okay, well, the market says we're only dictated, allowed to give you this. You know, that could be the future lawsuit that we see. It's like, okay, well, I'll take you to court. And have they avoided a lot of these antitrust things, or is this something that's just the next step that's going to come inevitably down the road?
I think it's the next step, right? I think that's just kind of where this ends up going, right? Like, there's going to be challenges to this. There's going to be conversations about it. There's going to be, you know, legal proceedings that end up creating whatever further discussion or further issue, whatever you want to call it. And that'll continue. It's not perfect again, but I do think that there is something to be said for how do you, I think the important thing to say is with the House settlement, with all of this, right? Like this is a starting point, right? Like this is not a final resolution. And I think that that being the case is part of why you're seeing all of these conversations bubble up, right? Like, I think there's very few people in college athletics that would look at the House settlement and say, yeah, this is exactly the structure that we're going to operate under for the next 50 years, right? Like, this is ultimately a blueprint of, I think, whatever iteration of college athletics comes next in 5, 10 years, whatever it might be. I think this is a starting point.
Ben Portnoy joining me here on the WadeFord.com hotline, breaking down this House settlement deal. Very confusing future for college athletics, but he's helping give it a kind of a makeover, you know, make it make sense for somebody like me. Sports Business Journal, of course, BPortnoy15 on Twitter if you want to give him a follow there. Ben, did you see Chris Vanini's article last weekend? It was he posted an interesting idea, and if you spend all $15 million on one season, right, just say football, then you aren't going to be able to pay anybody until the 2026 season or whenever it would be. So July 1st, 2026, that's the next time that it's going to all reset. Do you think that we could see teams elect to ignore any glaring holes that they have on their rosters so that they can attack the transfer portal with the larger war chest? Or in other words, do you think that tanking is coming to college football?
That's a good question. You know, I don't know. I mean, look, I think we're going to have to see, right? Like, there's going to be different iterations of this. There's going to be different schools that take different approaches. Like, is it better to leave some cash in the bank for the back end where you're trying to, you know, whether it's retain guys or bring guys into the fold, whatever it might be. Like, I do think there's something to that. And I think you're going to see different strategies around it, but I think it's going to vary by school pretty widely.
So, and then as far as private equity, we've already seen it make its way into college football, specifically Penn State and UCLA just signed monster deals. I mean, what was that, $500 million or something crazy, whatever that number was, I don't remember offhand. Mm-hmm. But what do you think that means for the sport, and do you think that could be the new norm? Like, could we start seeing that in SEC play or anything like that, or what do you make of that?
Yeah, you know, it's a good question. I think that, like, when it comes to private equity, especially what was announced with Elevate the other day, what we reported the other day, is that the company has, you know, secured deals with two Power Four schools. That might be, was, you know, reported elsewhere, but that's, you know, kind of a separate thing. But mm-hmm. I think that what the idea is that it's essentially like a high interest loan, right? Like, school needs $10 million to get to, if a school needs $10 million to build suites that they know is going to generate them $10 million each year and they need cash faster, or that, you know, working through the state procurement system or whatever it might be might take a little bit longer, they may err on the side of, hey, we need cash faster, and if we can do it through this group, then that might make some sense. So it's essentially a high interest loan, and I think there's a lot of schools that will take advantage of that. Now, as far as like a private equity firm going and buying an athletic department, that I don't think is necessarily coming, at least as college athletics exists right now. I have a hard time seeing those two things marrying. And I think that becomes a more difficult proposition when you factor in, you know, state schools versus private schools and higher education ties to everything. I just think that's an inherently more difficult thing to do.
Finishing up here with Ben Portnoy on the WadeFord.com hotline. He's with the Sports Business Journal. What do you make of the college football playoff expansion news? I mean, of course, we had all the meetings and everything with Craig Sankey and Tony Petitti and everybody else. I mean, what do you make of the future of that in college football specifically?
Yeah, I think there's going to continue to be discussion, whether it's a 5+11 format, whether it's automatic qualifiers, whatever it might be. it's going to continue to be a discussion. And I think that, you know, we'll see. I think that there continues to be conversation. I think that, you know, the SEC coaches kind of way or sort of flip sides, I suppose, if you want to call it that, toward more of a 5-11 format. I think that the Big Ten prefers, you know, an automatic qualifier format. I think it's going to vary, and I think it's going to become a little bit of quid pro quo of what are some people willing to give up in order to get another side of the coin. And I think that's going to continue to be a process. I think that this group is going to meet next week in Asheville, North Carolina, the conference commissioner meetings. Whether anything's decided, I doubt it, but I do think that there will be more conversation, and I think it's going to continue.
Last one here for you, Ben. You're an ex-Hoosier. What do you think of Kurt Cignetti in year two up there in the Big Ten?
Fingers crossed it's another CFP berth, but listen, I'll take 7 or 8 wins. I think that's a really good place to be for a program that's had a lot of struggles. So I will a bowl game is always a good thing in Bloomington.
Good man. Well, Ben Portnoy on the WadeFor.com hotline, thanks again. Appreciate you, buddy, and we'll talk again soon.
Anytime, man. Appreciate you having me.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Anyone who loves playing baseball or softball knows that one of the first steps in that journey is breaking in your first glove. It's where your love of the game began. Where does your child's baseball or softball journey begin? Go to playball.org to get started. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
A lot of things are going on in college athletics right now, and this is a wild time, you know, and we're starting to get some clarification as to what the future of college sports is really going to be. But ultimately, it's not anywhere close to being done, you know, and we're just a couple of lawsuits away from all of this just being flipped around and the table flipped on its head. But still, a lot of stuff to come here on that. And checking out the College World Series as well. LSU, they've got an early 3-0 lead over Arkansas. They are in full control of this game. Two really solid teams. All runs basically coming in one inning there for LSU. They load up the bases and they put some runs in. But look, big game there for these SEC squads. But as far as football goes, we just got the SEC football schedule. I got a couple of games that I'm really excited about, but I'm going to play a little edition of Man versus Machine. If you've never heard this before, I got this beautiful little machine here, and that's going to pull in, and I'm going to put all this information, I'm going to put it all into this machine, and it's actually going to tell me what the final record of the Georgia Bulldogs and the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets is going to be when it's all said and done. So, Eric Slaughter, what do you say? Let's hit a college football roundtable.
It's time for our college football rundown with the College Football Roundtable.
With Off the Bench, Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
All right, like I said, I'm going to put this stuff in the machine, and then it's going to spit out a record, and it's going to tell me how each team does. So I'm going to start with the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets here. So their August-September slate is going to be very interesting. They've got Colorado on the road over there in Boulder. They're going to play Deion Sanders' squad. And then you've got Gardner-Webb here at home. Then it's the Clemson Tigers, which in a game that I think is one of the most important games that Georgia Tech will have played on a football field in a very, very long time. And I don't count rivalry games, stuff like that. I'm talking about what the future of this program could be, what their 2025 season could end up being for Brent Key and company. I think that game is going to be really important. Temple at home, and then it's a road trip out to Wake Forest. So I'm going to ask the machine, what does Georgia Tech do over their first five games? All right, take a listen.
Georgia Tech will start the season off with a tight 24 win over Deion Sanders in Colorado. They then got an easy FCS foe with Gardner-Webb that they disposed of quite easily. But it's Clemson after that. The Yellow Jackets fell 31-24 in a brilliant game at Bobby Dodd to a TOP5 Tiger team. They rounded out their month with an easy bounce-back win over Temple and a tight 30-27 road win over Wake Forest.
Okay.
Not a bad start.
Okay. That's not so bad. That's not so bad for Georgia Tech and company. That's pretty solid. 4-1. I mean, a tight loss to Clemson at home, 31-24. Kate Klumpnick and company, they come to Bobby Dodd Stadium. They get a big win there. So, but the road win, 27-24. I actually think that Georgia Tech could win that game by a lot more. And look, 4-1? I'm looking at a Georgia Tech team there that could be in the top 25. But what about October? What are we looking at like that? So let's stick this in there.
The Jackets get a week to relax to kick off October, and then it's VT for a revisit of the brutal Tecmo Bowl loss from last year. Brent Key avenged that loss with a 33-20 win over the Hokies. Enter Sandman can't protect you now. A win over Duke comes next, and homecoming trouncing of Syracuse comes after that. Are the Yellow Jackets 7-1 heading into November? Looks like it.
7-1? Oh, folks, we might be looking at a top 15 Georgia Tech team. Dang, this crystal ball is pretty good. I think this works out pretty well for Georgia Tech fans. Okay. All right, let's stick this in the machine and let's see what November looks like.
November brings the Yellow Jackets back down to earth, though.
Oh, no.
A trip to NC State ends badly, and they sneak out a win over Georgia Tech. A road trip to Boston College almost bites them, too, but they hold on to beat the Eagles 27-24. A comfortable 34-14 win over Pitt gets their minds right before Georgia comes to town.
Oh, what happens with
but
this?
But it's not pretty when their neighbors to the east beat them at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. They just can't get over that hump, can they?
Oh, that's tough. That's tough. Not a good month of November. Okay, still pretty good. 9-3 on the season. I wish it would have been a little bit better. You end up, 2-2 in the month of November? All right, but what happens after the regular season? Is that good enough to go to an ACC championship game? What happens next?
Mm-hmm. It was a really good season for Georgia Tech, but they just barely missed out on a trip to the ACC title game. Instead, they settled for a trip to the Pop-Tarts Bowl where they beat a good Kansas State team. They ended up with 10 wins for the first time since 2014 and only the third time since 2000.
Okay. All right,
that's pretty good.
Yeah, that is pretty good. That is pretty good. Okay, not so bad. 10 wins, 10 and 3. That's solid, you know? And I think ultimately, I mean, Haynes King and company, Jamal Haynes, I mean, that offense is going to be a lot of fun. Eric Rivers, Buster Faulkner at the offensive play caller. I think that's pretty good. Ultimately, that's pretty darn good. Their offensive line should be one of the best in college football again this year. Haynes King, a senior quarterback. Jamal Haynes, a senior running back. You got great pass catchers, Malik Rutherford. The offense is going to be a lot of fun. Blake Gideon's the new defensive coordinator there on the flats. And look, this is a Georgia Tech team that I think actually has some bona fide expectations this season. So we're having a little fun with this. But 10-3, ultimately, I think is very much within their grasp. You go up and down this schedule. It lacks those killers that you've had in the past, especially last year. I mean, you trade Notre Dame for Temple. That's not so bad. I mean, look, your toughest ACC game, it's Clemson. Yes, you got to play Clemson anyway. If you want to, you got to beat the best to be the best. You know, so you get them in Atlanta, not at Death Valley. It actually shapes up pretty well here for Georgia Tech. This schedule in and of itself, and I think starting at Colorado, I think is going to be where this launch-off spot is really going to be. It's a Friday night game. It's going to be coming, I want to say it's 3:30 is the start time. I don't have it written down in front of me, but I want to say it's an afternoon game out there at 3:30. So 3:30, I'm getting the thumbs up from Eric. You get that win, everybody's going to be watching that game. It's the first real game of the season, you know, and it's Georgia Tech and it's Colorado, and you're always going to get a lot of eyeballs on Deion Sanders. You get a win there. I mean, the machine tells me it's 27-24. I think that they're going to win a little bit more comfortably than that. I'm just not a big believer in Colorado this year. Just they're replacing a lot of talent, you know. Deion Sanders is a great coach, but we'll see what they can do. I mean, you lost a Heisman Trophy winner, and Shedeur Sanders, a 4,000-yard passer. It's not going to be easy to replace talent like that. So, but I think Georgia Tech's going to get a lot of eyeballs. And you know what comes with eyeballs? Recognition. If you win, a lot of eyeballs are going to be on them again when they play Clemson. They could be a top 25 team. They could be a top 20 team when Clemson comes to town. And I think if you can, theoretically, if you beat Clemson there, you're looking at a Georgia Tech team that I think is going to represent in the ACC championship game. So I disagree with our ChatGPT machine. And I say that Georgia Tech represents the ACC in the championship game. In the ACC championship game, I bet they get a rematch with Clemson. I don't think they win that rematch, but they're going to be on the outside looking in, but barely, of this college football playoff. I think they absolutely can hit that. You just got to check a couple of boxes there with Blake Gideon on defense, but I think it's very much in the cards. All right, so the Georgia Bulldogs. So let's change gears here and talk about those rivals down to the east over there in Athens. The month of September for these Georgia Bulldogs, it kind of shapes up not so bad. I mean, it's Marshall, it's Austin Peay, whatever. But it's a road trip to Tennessee, and then it's Alabama coming to Athens for one of the games that I am most excited for in 2025. What does September look like here for these Georgia Bulldogs?
September is a great starting point for the Georgia Bulldogs. Marshall won't keep up with UGA's depth on either side of the ball. Easy opener as they win 45-10. Then the winning continues in week two with a stat padding 52-3 win over Austin Peay.
It gets
a lot harder after that with a road trip to Tennessee.
Ooh, this is a good one.
Nayland will be rocking, but Georgia's defense makes a late stand and the Dogs win 31-27. Then it's a bye week before Alabama comes to Athens for a national spotlight game. Kirby Smart gets revenge on his former team and they win 27-24 in a physical battle.
Okay, that's not so bad. Look, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. And look, any Georgia fan out there, I mean, you beat Alabama, that's, yeah, just don't hold your breath. I mean, like, that's a squad that no matter who's playing on that team, it just seems like Georgia just can't get over that hump. It doesn't matter what's going on. You thought Kalen DeBoer was going to come in, and then all of a sudden it was all going to change for Kirby Smart and company, but it just hasn't. It was probably your worst half of the season last year when you played at Bryant-Denny, but this one's going to be in Athens, you know, and it's going to be probably one of the best games that of the 2025 season, at least one of the most anticipated games. But no, look, we're having a little college football roundtable here. We're having a little fun. We're playing with ChatGPT. It's man versus machine. So we're going to have the machine come out here. It's going to spit out win totals, and it's trying to tell me what Georgia and Georgia Tech are going to do on the gridiron this fall. So what about the month of October? Georgia's still 4-0, but October comes out. It's Kentucky. It's a road trip to Auburn. It's Ole Miss. So it's only three games, but what does it do? Let's take a listen.
September is a great starting point for the Georgia Bulldogs. Marshall won't keep up with UGA's depth on either side of the ball. October is an up-and-down month for Georgia. They got a physical 34-13 win over Kentucky in Athens before having another tough road trip on their hands. Auburn's voodoo magic keeps it interesting, but Georgia will grind out another big win over the Tigers 30-21. Kirby Smart will then be visited by his old buddy Lane Kiffin, and he won't be able to avenge last year's loss to the Rebels. The Lane train hands UGA its first loss of the season and first loss in Athens since 2019.
Wow. Wow. Lane Kiffin? Again? 2 years in a row? That's crazy. The machine does not seem to be a big fan of Georgia and Ole Miss playing each other. No, that's not a good one there for Georgia and company. But look, you get the bye week. You're still looking pretty good. I want to say you're, what? Let me do this. 7-1? Yeah, that's pretty solid. You're still in firm control of your destiny. Now comes the month of November. Excuse me, you're 6-1. But now you got five games coming in here in the month of November. Let's take a listen. How does it go?
The Lizards from Gainesville back home with another loss after Georgia gets some classic cocktail party drama.
I don't think the machine likes
Georgia.
Florida
escapes in the fourth quarter with a defensive stand. Dogs won 28-24, but they have to sweat every second. It's time for another road trip, but cowbells can't rattle UGA. The Bulldogs from Georgia dominate line of scrimmage on both sides, and the Bulldogs from Mississippi can't keep up. The winning can't keep going in the loaded Texas Longhorns and may be peaking late in the season. UGA drops a thriller at home 31-28. Up next is an easy 49-6 win over Charlotte before the Dogs get a trip to Atlanta to face their little bros at Georgia Tech.
Oh, come on.
Last year took 8 overtimes, but this year won't be close. Ooh. Georgia beats the Yellow Jackets 38-17.
Ouch. Ouch. All right, not so bad. You lose to Texas, but that should still be pretty good. I mean, it's basically what you did last year. What do you say, Machine? Is that good enough to make an SEC championship? And what happens in the postseason?
It was enough to book their trip back to Atlanta in the SEC championship. They'll get another rematch with Texas, and they come out on top again. They will win back-to-back SEC titles after another thriller.
Okay, but what about the postseason? What happens with that one? Machine, what happens? They just won an SEC title, but what about the playoff?
Georgia gets the bye week before getting the chance to smack around Washington in the Peach Bowl in Atlanta.
Okay.
That's their third straight game at the Benz, by the way. Then they got a 2022 rematch with Ohio State in the semis, and they won another thriller at the buzzer.
Oh.
This time, they hit a game-winning field goal to escape 27-24. In the national title, they beat Michigan 28-23, and Gunnar Stockton secures his legacy, and Kirby gets his third national title in 5 years. Checkmark SEC champs, checkmark 12-team CFP champions, checkmark dynasty solidified.
Wow, ChatGPT is bullish on the Georgia Bulldogs. How about that? They say they win a national championship. That's pretty fun. I don't know. Man versus machine, I think ultimately Georgia at their best, maybe. I don't know. They got to run the ball better. The defense should be really good. The defensive line should be strong. You know, you're young on that defensive line. You got some unproven talent on defense in general, but you got the talent to get it done. And I'm always going to buy into a Kirby Smart defense, period, full stop. You know, and this was a unit that I don't think got enough respect in 2024. You know, just talking specifically about that defense. But can Gunnar Stockton unlock the next level? ChatGPT says yes. National champions beating Michigan? I don't think Michigan's going to be up there either. So we'll see. I don't know. But that's our little crystal ball. We put a little man versus machine. I had a little fun with that. All right. When we get back, though, a team that's not having a lot of fun. Ooh, this Atlanta United squad. Oh, my God. What's going on with them? Well, we'll talk to Jason Longshore. He'll explain a little bit more about what's going on there. Plus, preview what is also going on with Team USA. We got a World Cup in a year. This team doesn't look ready. I'll ask them what they can do better. When we get back, you're coming off the bench with me right here, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Wherever summer takes you, save on your journey with True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull. Enjoy the new Red Bull Summer Edition, White Peach, a perfect balance of bold, sweet, and refreshing. Right now, grab any 3 8-ounce Red Bull for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon, just in time for your next road trip. Save big all summer long with the True Rewards mobile app, available in your favorite app store. True North Convenience Stores, fast, friendly, clean.
Anyone who loves playing baseball or softball knows that one of the first steps in that journey is breaking in your first glove. It's where your love of the game began. Where does your child's baseball or softball journey begin? Go to playball.org to get started. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.